Attention FM DJs in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
Seconds after the hour of noon, and this is the month of June in the year of our Lord 2006. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day, live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. It is the Rick Emerson Show, live from beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We appreciate your radio presence and your patronage on this Friday, and welcome to day 12. It is 503-733-2. 970, 503-733-2970. You want to email and be part of today's program electronically. You may do that as well, my chums. It is rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Here's what's coming up. It doesn't really matter what else is coming up. Everything else is thrown over aboard and to the wayside, because at 1 o'clock today, 1 o'clock today, he will be wheeled away from his supporting devices and tubes. And Don Rickles will be joining us here on the airwaves of AM 970. You have no idea, by the way. It's like Indy going and getting that gold statue at the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Where it's like he had to go through the thing and then you switch out the bag of sand and escape the rolling boulder. And the things we had to do. I don't even, at this point, I don't even care if the universe is any good. He could come on and just give me a rasping wheeze for 8-9 minutes. It doesn't matter. Just everything we had to do, the machinations that were involved in getting Don Rickles on the program today were immense, to say the least.
It could be like the last interview we had here.
Nothing could be like the last interview we had.
It could be the same person.
I've already... Really, how would we even know? Just a whole lot of... That's it. That's all it is. I'm making a prediction right now. This is just a supposition, and I have no evidence upon which the basis. But my prediction now is that... Because we had Steven Seagal... It's sort of like a bizarro world kind of thing. Because we had Steven Seagal came on, and it's like, you figure Steven Seagal's a guy, he's above the law, he's out for justice, he's hard to kill, he's marked for death. He's like, he'd take your spine out with his bare hands. And so he comes on the air, though, and it just sounds like he's got narcolepsy. So my prediction today, though, is that Rickles is going to be on. Rickles is going to be on, and there will be no holding him back. It's only a prediction. I have nothing upon which to base that.
I think he can still tear out your spine.
I think he's going to be grumpy.
All right. Let's see. What else we got coming up today? Today, countdown to 666 continues. We're now 4 days away from Horns Across the Hawthorne, coming up next Tuesday. Next Tuesday, June 6, 2006, we will be assembling. I got it here. We're assembling on the grassy knoll just below the northwest pedestrian entrance to the Hawthorne Bridge. That is coming up next Tuesday for the greatest photo op in the history of all mankind, followed by the 666 party at Dante. So we'll talk more about that. We've got a Bushwatch coming up today, Geek Watch, another installment of It's the Worst Song You've Ever Heard, and today's top five most overused talk radio music beds of all time. We will get to that today. Top five most overused radio talk radio music beds of all time. And also, because Scotty J is with us today, intern Scotty J, screening your calls and assisting us in every way humanly possible. There was some unpleasantness last week. About 7 days ago, when Tim left to go to Vegas. And this is not a thing that I was appraised of beforehand. There's certain things about which I am in the know, and then there's certain things by which I am blindsided during this very fine radio program. One of them is Tim leaving at 2, and leaving us in the hands of no one to do the news.
But you did get sweet revenge, and you don't even know it. I hopped on the train that went back to the west side 2 miles an hour all the way, and it took me like an hour and a half to get home. So all the time I thought I was going to save, they made it up.
There you go. Hoist. Charade you are, Tim Riley. Hoist by your own petard. And the travel, and is this the max to the airport?
Well, no, I was gonna drive to the airport because I had to drop off the dogs first.
Right.
But I was taking the Max home,
yeah, no,
and then driving back to the airport.
Well, and again, and last Friday, it was all raining and whatnot. It's like traveling inside somebody else's sweat sock. You don't want to do that.
I don't like taking the Max to the airport. You could get killed on the way by some of the people on there.
Well, you get those guys that
all
clearly...
All these pimps around there. trying to line up all these appointments on the way to the... Well, never mind.
It's Tim Riley, newsman, who made that observation about...
Pimps on the MAX train.
Uh-huh. Some of our co-residents here in the City of Roses. Here's the thing, though, is that you ride... You go on the MAX, and there's clearly those people where, like, that is their home. Is they can't afford the $5 a night flop house, but that dollar, especially because, as you have discerned, there's a demonstrable and learnable pattern to when they get on the MAX and check for your tickets. Because I thought it was every day. There's that, you get on the MAX, you get on the bus, and there's that sign that looks like a KGB sign where there's the guy with like the universal symbol for cop. It's like a hat on his head. And then there's like the little stick figure of like the citizen holding up their papers, their identification, so they're not sent to a gulag somewhere. But it's only like it's like Monday and alternate Wednesdays. And other than that, you're home free. And so those guys, that's clearly, where do you live? Well, I live in the third seat on the MAX that goes back and forth between the airport. Me and my baby mama. Yeah, so I no longer know what I was talking about. Oh, so Tim was gone last week. It was not here to do the news. Scotty J was...
For only an hour.
And the audience was... It didn't feel like an hour. It was like an hour on metric time. It was... every time he opened his mouth to continue to the news, it's like the baby Jesus cried and little pieces of my soul were chipped away and incinerated. And so the audience was... The audience was somewhat harsh in their assessment of Scott's news reading abilities last week. So to assuage his pain, to make him feel better, we've done a thing that we do this a couple times a year on the show, where Tim and I have brought in some of our air checks from previous incarnations of our radio selves. And we'll get to those later on today. Joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. How's your week going?
Oh, woo! Boy. Just doesn't get any better than this.
All right. We'll answer the question everybody's thinking here in just a moment. Tim Riley is working on the following stories for your edification today.
A drunk driver raises havoc on Northeast 82nd. An Aurora farm worker loses his limbs in a hay-cutting machine.
Right.
There's a new national spelling bee champ. The president gets ready to rally Republicans to make gays miserable again. And Don Rickles will be here shortly.
Don Rickles, a friend of the gays everywhere. It's 503-733-2970. All that plus, we have the news pile to get to. Scott Daly's going to be here from FilmFeverRadio.com. And we got those by popular request. And it really is popular request this time. Normally, I say that as code for just a thing I want to play without any real justification. By popular request, we will be playing the Vernon Robinson campaign ads again today. Because they are fantastic. All right, so we're already getting behind. But before we proceed with today's... today's program, we should probably address the strange sizzling, popping, screaming sounds that were heard yesterday at the end of this program. Here's the best thing about it, though.
Too bad you don't get to hear on pre-delay like I did in the other room. Oh, I've never heard such talk.
Did you
get the delay?
No, if you were listening yesterday, the best part about it was like 10 seconds after Sarah said the phrase, yeah, I'm feeling all that job security. And then, moments later, as though it were a mini slow-motion horror film unfolding right before my eyes in glorious Panavision and Technicolor, Sarah reaches up to adjust something or other somewhere, hand grazes the coffee cup.
Just enough.
Coffee cup tilts, wobbles just a little, and then it reaches that center of gravity. It reaches that gravitational event horizon. I look over. And it's that hole that, you know, no, coffee cup down, coffee splashes out, and then, just like at the end of Match Point, you have that vague glimmer of hope in your soul that the coffee will avoid the control board. That day was not yesterday.
Did you already check with management to make sure I'm not going to get fired before you're talking about this?
Yeah, well,
they didn't know until...
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Thank you very much.
No, everybody knows. You trust me. It was on a radio station. It was live over the air.
even the geeks knew. Geeks, seriously. I ran into on my way out of here yesterday knew exactly.
Here's the thing I've learned, is that you can't really do something on a radio program and then have a discussion later enough about whether anybody knows about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so the best part, though, was da-da-da-da, job security, wham, coffee into the control board. And then I actually could hear in my headphones the sizzling noise as the transistor inside sort of went. And then everything just went dead. and then there was sort of that moment of, oh, I don't. Oh. And then the engineers come in with that stuff they spray, whatever, that liquid, the oxygen crap, that they, whatever it is, that stuff they put in there. It is only really those moments that you understand why we treat the geeks with just deference around here. Because really, they hold our small lives in the palm of their hairy hands. You know what I mean? It's, if you have the geeks on your side, you can do anything. Not, you're going to be shining their shoes. So there you go. So to answer the myriad questions.
That's what happened.
Random chaotic events at the end of yesterday's program. There you go. That is all ye know and all ye need know. This is the Rick Emerson Show. Ladies and gentlemen, let us go to your personal savior, Tim Riley, at the City Desk.
For the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour. And now, from the City Desk, Tim Riley.
From high atop the bottom of the coin tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents the City Desk News Beat. Tim Riley reporting. Telephone poles, police cars, and other drivers took a beating as an intoxicated driver bulldozed his way down Northeast 82nd Avenue early this morning. Police got a 911 call about a car into a telephone pole near Northeast 82nd and Woodward last night. And when the female officer arrived, the suspect backed his vehicle into a patrol car and then continued down Northeast 82nd. Then the driver swerved into oncoming traffic and hit another car. The driver was shaken up and taken to Portland Hospital.
It's a good thing that the police are getting the dangerous drivers off the street after Sarah Dillon's experience on Sunday. Do we have any? Who was this? Did they arrest whoever it was?
Yes, they did. Right. The police officer used his patrol car to hit the suspect's car, forcing it into another telephone pole and finally bringing it to a stop. But they couldn't get the driver out of the vehicle.
That's got to be a satisfying feeling, too. Speaking of tipping points, there's got to be a little moment inside your cop head when you realize that you're getting to do one of those things that you only read about in, like, Ed McBain novels. Yeah, you know what I mean? Because it's like when you take, at least for the LAPD, when they train the LAPD, they have those nightsticks, those batons. Mm-hmm. And there are two ways to use that. There is the way you use it where you're sort of herding people along. You know, you're sort of using it as really. There's that way you can hold that nightstick where there's that part that juts out, the perpendicular part. You can hold that, and then the actual nightstick is parallel with your arm, and you use it as a brace just to push people out of your way. That's the preferred method by which you use that. You are not, in the words of Chief Daryl Gates, supposed to wield it like a truncheon, but except in 10% of the situations. They do teach you in the LAPD, whatever they use of force classes or whatever, that there are a specific set of circumstances during which you may hold it above your head like the gladiators of yore and bring it down on the mushy skull of some pinhead. And so it is with ramming somebody with your car. And that's got to be the best and worst feeling on earth. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? When you realize that you are now living one of those situations. That alone is enough to make you become a cop.
Well, the suspect was then tasered by cops and subdued, but they're not done yet. They had to get him out of his seatbelt to get him out of the car.
Tell me they had to use the jaws of life.
It doesn't say. But the unidentified man was high on drugs.
Was he on?
Intoxicated.
The PCP?
It doesn't say.
All right. No, are kids still high on the PCP? Is that still the drug that everything is blamed on?
No, they're all playing the choking game. And on the MySpace playing the choking game.
Ah, kids and their crazy death games.
Anyway. Oh, boy, this isn't a very good one to read at lunchtime. I'm sorry, but it's the top story. This comes to us from Aurora, which is an agricultural community just south of Portland on the I-5. You've probably seen signs for it. Doctors are trying to save a worker who got tangled up in a hay machine. The hay machine cut off the worker's arms below the elbow, and the man was flown by a lifeline helicopter to Emmanuel. He was working for Anderson Hay and Grain off the I-5, so hopefully he'll be okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm sure okay is the word to describe him. Sure. I'll be playing ping pong any day now. On the subject of limbless people, did you see that guy that climbed Mount Everest? The guy with no legs? You no longer have any excuse for anything you can't get done in your life, because a guy with no legs climbed Mount Everest, 2 weeks ago, and it's the best way. See, and there's stuff you don't really think about. There's things that they don't really occur to you. Because, like, why would they until you see them in real life? Guy, and I don't know if he was born with no legs or some sort of a threshing machine accident or something. You never really think about the fact that if you have no legs, you don't have to wear pants. Which is, you know, I mean, you just, as long as your business is covered, everything's fine. So he's climbing Mount Everest, and I guess when you're climbing Everest, I guess the deal is you want to reduce the amount of weight, like you don't want to be weighed down by stuff. Yeah. So from the waist up, I forget his name, but from the waist up, he's got the parka and the goggles and the oxygen mask and the, you know, thing going on. And then from the waist down, he's just got not just because you think prosthetic legs, you think like Heather Mills kind of, where they look like mannequin legs. These are just metal legs, but they look like Terminator legs. They're just like a metal skeleton. It's like metal femurs, all the way down, no pants. So he's just got these metal legs, and then they just end in like those spiky snowshoe things, you know, those shoes with like the 7-inch spikes that you use to climb ice with. It's the best thing I've ever seen. He really looks like he was made by like the Cyberdyne, the Cybernetics Corporation. And he's just walking up the mountain, just looking like a Ed 209, scaling up this huge ice sheet. It really is like the greatest scary, like an army of those guys, and your city would be done, my friend. You would be hosed.
Meanwhile, Chinese police have busted a gang of death mute thieves in Shanghai that escaped from prison hundreds of kilometers away. The outfit was run by Wang Wengdong, 40, a deaf man serving a life sentence for manslaughter in the southeast province of Jiangxi.
You've got to read slower, because as soon as I develop a wisecrack, you're already onto a new and better one.
Oh, okay. Police arrested the group of 13 members after a six-month spree of stealing on Shanghai public buses. Wang sent orders to his deaf-mute subordinates in communicating in sign language during prison visiting hours. Police found 100,000 yuan stashed in a bank account in Jiangxi. The deaf-mute pilferers' ring followed a strict discipline of their own. The members submitted all the valuables and cash they stole every day to their deaf-mute leaders, who would receive their income at the end of the year.
I, for one, welcome our deaf-mute overlords.
Deaf-mute P1s.
Well, there you go. There's nothing I can do with that story. I've been bested. I've been bested by the story itself. Here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
Time for the Bushwatch.
Here's your Bushwatch.
Kind of in charge. We've got the whole country saying, that's my Bush. Life is hard. That's the price of fame. When you're president, everyone knows your name. Hey, what's that thing? It's my Bush. I can't believe he's actually in the White House. That's our man. That's my Bush.
Well, the president was right, and so was Dick Cheney. The insurgency is in its last throes, now that total anarchy is in. Indeed, there has been a subtle but important change in the violence in Iraq. The main enemy in many places is no longer the insurgency. It is plain anarchy. Many wars are all over the place. The only way to stop it is to go house to house and beat people. Apparently, we get in trouble every time we do that, so just get used to it. The insurgency is out. Anarchy in.
Going to be a whole lot of intense staring from now on. That's going to be our only enforcement technique.
New York State Comptroller Alan Havisi publicly apologized for a beyond dumb remark about his fellow Democrats. Quote, this is quoting him, not us.
This, by the way, this is not the opinion of the Rick Emerson Show.
Or I.
Its successors, heirs, or assigns, nor anyone associated with CBS Radio, nor its sponsors, nor management.
The quote is, putting a bullet between the president's eyes.
Which is
quote.
A thing that we are opposed to, because we wish George W. Bush and all elected officials, federally and otherwise, long and healthy lives.
We make changes at the ballot box in this country.
We do not vote with our rifles in this country.
So, some of us don't even bother at all.
Some of us don't even care.
Yeah. Some of us They're all the same party, aren't they?
Some of us are too busy stuffing our face full of pizza to even get out of the lazy boy.
Well, in a videotaped speech, LVC describes Senator Charles Schumer, Democrat of New York, as, quote, the man who would put a bullet between the president's eyes if he could get away with it, unquote. That, this is him.
That does
talking.
Sound diplomatic.
I do speak extemporaneously, he said, and I've never said anything like this before, apparently not. LVC apologized to Bush and Schumer, and he said he is not a person of violence.
Of course. You're right.
So let's move along here. We're going to do cuts 3 and 4. I'm a little bit out of order here.
Are we still in the Bushwatch?
Yes,
Okay, 3 and 4. This is Tony Snow. Okay.
President Bush said he would like to see, because nothing else is going right, the economy and the war, and well, he's not very popular, so it's time to pick on the gays again. President Bush would like to see the Senate pass a constitutional amendment on marriage, and that's what White House spokesman Tony Snow told the White House news briefing today.
He thinks people ought to have the freedom to lead their private lives. He also does not believe that that means that you have to redefine the institution of marriage. He believes the institution of marriage is between a man and a woman.
When did it become what he wants and not what everybody wants?
And when did a guy with a name like a drag queen become the communications director? Tony Snow sounds like some guy, 6'2", down at Darcel's, come on over and give you some spaghetti during happy hour.
He rejected charges of political expedience and said a constitutional amendment on marriage is needed because of inappropriate, quote, judicial activism, unquote.
There have been 4 states, California, Maryland, New York, and Washington, where trial courts have found a provision that would permit same-sex marriage. And the president thinks that personal relationships of this sort, ought to be decided by people and by legislators and not by courts.
All right. Well,
it might not work this time, but people really aren't that much smarter than they were
no,
a few years ago.
It's
one big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
There you go.
And that is the Bush
That's
Watch.
Your Bush Watch for Friday.
The
there was really no other way to end it.
He's kind of in charge. He's got the whole country saying, that's my bird.
Is Mary, is it, do we know if Mary Cheney is married?
Because
she is one of the gays, is she not?
Well, she lives in Colorado, so it wouldn't be legal.
Oh, that's right, because Colorado, that man, that's like your...
She'd have to be in the People's Republic of Massachusetts, which apparently isn't one of the states of the Union, according to many.
And they like the Dixie chicks there, too.
Massachusetts and San Francisco.
And I like the rest of us.
Canada.
I don't like people who look different.
Meanwhile, Rick Santorum was in Pittsburgh to pick up an endorsement for his reelection campaign.
Just keep on coming.
He's one of those people. This is going to be cut number five. Majority Leader Bill Frist said that Santorum's legislation has proven to work in Texas. Who would
your medical
that?
Students and residents, they're getting out of the state as quickly as they can. And that's not true in states like Texas now, where they've had an influx since they passed this model. 3,000 physicians have come into the state of Texas. Right now, premiums have fallen 20% last year, 80% since they've actually implemented it in 2003.
I don't even know what this story is about. I assumed it because it contains the words Rick and Santorum, I assumed it was some sort of gay baiting story, but apparently not.
No, that's a medical thing, because all these doctors are quitting, so he's passing legislation to protect patients.
From
malpractice suits, because all these doctors have to...
All right. Here's the thing. It's just, as a reader of the Savage Love column, I find any story containing the word Santorum...
Oh, okay, I know what you're talking.
It just... I find it to be distracting. And so as soon as the story starts to roll, I was busy trying to flush unpleasant images out of my head. It does make it difficult to concentrate on the actual content of said piece of journalism. All right. Let's move along.
You know what? I neglected the top story.
Is this the spelling bee?
It is. It's going to be cut number one and two here.
Lisa Goddard will be joining us from the Hill in Washington, D.C. to talk about that later on. But we'll also have Jim Roop from Los Angeles. I didn't see her on television, but I saw an interview in the paper with the girl who won this this morning. And it's just, you can just smell the no friend vibe on some of those kids.
She's going to be your boss in 10 years.
Right off the page. No, it's true. She'll be the comptroller. She'll be the market manager. She'll be working in human resources. They never put people like that in a position where they actually have to interact with other humans, because most of them lack that skill. But she'll end up somewhere above all of us in the corporate structure. There's no doubt about it.
Well, it was a close finish at the 2006 Scripps National Spelling Bee. Catherine Close, the 13-year-old eighth grader from Asbury Park, New Jersey, beat out hundreds of competitors to emerge as this year's winner. After opponents exited the competition, Close had to spell one final word of the night to win the title.
Ursprache.
Ursprache. U-R-S-P-R-A-C-H-E. Ursprache.
That is correct. I know what you're saying. What is an Ursprache? Well, it comes from German origin. It is defined as a parent language, especially one constructed from the evidence of later languages. I have no idea what I'm talking about. Never mind spelling.
Can't be bringing in things from other countries. That seems like cheating.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is even worse. Here comes another German word. 14-year-old eighth grader Fanola Hackett of Alberta, Canada, sealed her second place fate when she spelled Weltschmerz.
Weltschmerz.
She's doing that stupid Alex Trebek thing too, of trying to make sure that we know how, you know, that she knows how to pronounce it.
Weltschmerz.
Weltschmerz is Weltschmerz.
So much for the public school system of Canada, run by a bunch of socialists.
You can either have free healthcare or spelling ability. Pick one now. All right, there you go. Let's do one more, and then we'll break. We got Lisa Goddard from CNN coming at the bottom of the hour. It's 503-733-2970. Here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
Well, a woman asked a judge to toss her $173.50 fine for throwing lettuce out of her car, but he ordered her to fork over the green. Don Higgins, who was cited October 18th while parking outside a Walmart near Easton, Pennsylvania, appeared in court. Apparently, she took her daughters and a friend to the store, then stopped at McDonald's along the way. She pulled into a parking space to finish her McDonald's meal at Walmart and decided not to eat the half dozen or so leaves in her salad because that would be incredibly unhealthy. After failing to appear before district court on December 22nd, Higgins discovered she had been convicted in absentia and owed the state $173.50. President Judge Walter Freeburg found Higgins guilty after listening to her attorney pepper a police officer with questions about lettuce. She's mulling an appeal to a superior court as a matter of principle. Probably the most expensive McDonald's salad ever sold.
I cannot fathom being somebody who works for the Associated Press and you come in and this is your story assignment
Eastern
for the morning.
Pennsylvania. It's northeast. There's not much going on up there.
It's the whole place. It's just a big void.
It's the Rust Belt. There's nobody left there.
So there you go.
It's a bunch of old white ladies.
Eating her McDonald's. Avoid that lettuce like the plague, by the way. You don't want to get any inadvertent nutrients into your large Walmart shopping ass. So whatever you say. If only she was clutching like a King of Queens DVD set or something for this sort of idiot trifecta. Take a break here. We'll come back. It's 503-733-2970. This is the Rick Emerson Show. Coming up, Lisa Goddard from CNN later on. Jim Roop from CNN. Don Rickles joining us at 1 o'clock. Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com. And the top five most overused talk radio music beds of all time. You stay there. It is the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. Back after this. Not even in there. Without even being asked, he's off making coffee. That's what I'm talking about. That's the key to radio success, my friends. You want to know how to climb that corporate ladder? Start with a C. Caffeine. Get it for me now. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It's 503-733-2970. I think there's actually a part of my brain that is responsible for hitting posts, and it's enlarged like a huge hypothalamus. You know what I mean? I'm one of those guys that... Roll your eyes at me. It's an impressive skill. I have value. I work with the goddamn customers. It's like one of those things where you die and then they cut open, like with, what's his name? Kip Kinkle? Well, he's not dead, as far as we know. But they do the CAT scan and they cut open your brain. They go, we discovered that Kip Kinkle's brain is full of holes. Or like Jeffrey Dahmer. Didn't they discover that Jeffrey Dahmer was like a small demon or something, just like a gnome living inside of him? He said he had something wrong with his brain. It was like part of his brain was all messed up or weird or whatever. They're going to, someday when I die, they will be doing the post-mortem, the autopsy. They're going to find a huge, large section of my brain that is entirely responsible for Three's Company episodes, Kiss album titles, and the ability to hit post on the Living Color song. Science will take a large step forward. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. From the Hill in Washington, D.C., our good friend, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard, who joins us now. Lisa Goddard, how are you, my friend?
Hey, Rick. It's song titles, huh?
What's that?
Kiss?
Well, there was a time. These abilities may have withered with age, as the cruel the cruel hand of the Reaper eventually comes for us all. But there was a time, Lisa Goddard from CNN, when I could correctly name, I could give you in chronological order all, I think it was then, 23 Kiss albums. Now, I don't think I can do it anymore.
You have the one with the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra?
That's Kiss Alive 4, by the way. That's also...
Oh, look at that!
That is all... Melbourne Symphony. That is, by the way, that's because the only place they toured for that part phase of their career was Australia. Also, if you buy Kiss Alive 4, Lisa, you will find that that is the only Kiss album other than Unmasked, which contains the song Shandy, because it's a terrible song that was a huge hit in Australia. Yeah! That's how I roll.
I'm glad and frightened that I asked.
You're really the only person who's even bothered to feign interest in that whole speech. I did. Like, I had my wife, Lisa, or Lisa, Sarah, Tim, I say it, and they just sort of, go, that's really interesting. And inside their head, they're like, must update resume, must find new job.
So, even your wife has a resume.
No, she's got a list of other guys that she's going to marry after she decides to dump me for being interested in pop culture minutiae instead of anything interesting. Speaking of pop culture minutiae, note the seamless segue there. Let's talk about this spelling bee, which we've been all over like white on rice for the last 3 days. So tell me, what is this guy, Catherine Close?
Catherine Close, Carrie, to her friends and to the media who doesn't know anything about her but who is embracing her as if they are her child.
That's why we have you on this program, because you pull back the curtain just a little bit and you allow us to see the machinations behind the inner workings. So... what is this word she spelled?
Yeah, Ohrsprache.
All right, and that means what exactly?
It means, you know, what you're going to hear is it means apparent language, but it's very specific. It means apparent language, especially one that comes, that is put together from current languages. So, like, if you take current languages and try and figure out if they all had a common language way back when that we don't really know about, but we think was their
parents. Oh, I see. Okay, no, I can.
All the time, I'm sure, in Portland. that would be Ohrsprache.
No, I can. Okay, so I'm actually looking at it now, and linguistically it does make sense, because you hear about something being an Ur-text, which means that it is sort of the definitive or original writing on a subject or topic.
Oh, wow, and I can't believe they got you out on restaurant in the school spelling bee. Come on.
Thanks for rubbing salt into that wound. Thanks for never letting me forget. Thanks for making sure that my everyday is a walking trauma, Lisa. I appreciate
that. You know, that's right.
And so
this was her fifth time, or it was her fourth time at the spelling bee. And you know, the final three women were the last ones standing. And we had a Canadienne left, as well as a girl from North Carolina, so some decent distribution.
But it is good to see that in the end, America was victorious and triumphant once again.
In the end, right, it came down to Finola Hackett from Alberta against Carrie Close of New Jersey, a good New Jersey girl, although she does like to sail. So I don't know if that, you know, associate that with New Jersey usually, but she is a sailor. But the two of them went eye to eye, toe to toe.
Let me ask you this question. Speaking now just as one journalist to another, do these kids unnerve you or creep you out in any way?
Because you know, there was definitely a couple of different groups of this spelling bee. There were the kids that were just happened to be pretty smart, and you talk to them, and they would say, you know, yeah, I like spelling, but, you know, I really like to just read and write stories, you know? And then there were the kids who really almost couldn't quite respond. They weren't really socially necessarily altogether there yet. You know, they were very, very in that weird teenage, awkward, super smart period. And those seem to be the kids that did the best.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to be really normal in 5 or 6 years. I'm sure they'll be social butterflies by the time they're 25. They're not at all going to be lurking in a basement somewhere with, like, at as their middle name.
Well, perhaps they'll be inventing new computer software and running all of our lives.
Yeah, probably.
That's a possibility. But, yeah, you know, these kids, there was definitely something unnerving about them. Because you definitely felt like they knew more already.
A lot of these spelling bee kids have got that weird omen vibe to them. You know what I mean? Like, you expect Carmen Burana to be playing everywhere they go.
A little bit. But, you know, it's funny. It's kind of changing. Like, these kids obviously know that the spelling bee has some sort of coolness to it that they can't quite understand, but they know it. And, you know, there was even the last boy standing in the spelling bee. Some of your listeners might have seen him. This kid from Missouri, Rajiv, kind of had this, he would look at the camera and be like, that's right. You know, he kind of had this attitude, and you're like, wow, you're still kind of a scrawny nerd, and you've got this big attitude, you know, so you can tell they're trying to mix these worlds and trying to work with the cool here. It was definitely, I think, something new at the spelling bee this year.
Yeah, they've all just got that weird, the cyborg feel to them. But, you know, whatever. You know, we've all got to be good at something, I suppose.
Yeah, so. this sounds like this goes way back with you. This sounds like some hardcore resentment to me.
I'm trying to work through it right here. Really, you're just functioning as my therapist right now, Lisa.
No, I think this is a great event. The big deal with this is going to be to watch the ratings. You know, just from talking to people, of course, Washington is the nerd central, I would say, perhaps, in the United States. But a lot of people just on the subway were talking about this spelling bee, and what it's going to be interesting to watch the ratings of this. If the ratings are very high, I don't know if this is going to be for the best or not. You could possibly see some people in the TV industry talking about, honestly, spelling reality shows, not just the National Spelling Bee, but a whole different type of spelling type of program. I don't know if that's going to be the way to go, but if the ratings were super high, that kind of stuff is going to get around.
Look, in the future, it's reality shows, anything, as long as it contains like a mother and a daughter not getting along, someone weeping openly at some point, or the phrase, and then all my dreams came crashing down, it's like that's a series right now. Everybody in America will watch. All of these kids, they remind me of that evil little kid from Searching for Bobby Fischer. The weird little kid with the brush cut, it was all... Anyway. All right, Lisa Goddard, enjoy your weekend. We will talk to you soon.
Hey, you too. Take care.
Thank you. All right, there you go. There's Lisa Goddard, CNN radio correspondent in Washington.
Well, there already is a Tory spelling show on.
Yes, and seriously. Nerd Central, there is where
she's... And why are Canadians allowed into our national spelling bee? American spellers allowed in the Canadian spelling bee?
One big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
Here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
Okay, so the title of this is... He was throwing people around like rag dolls. This comes to us from Unity, Oregon. An upset bar patron went on a rampage after he was asked about his family name, sending 5 people to the hospital. 41-year-old Dennis Lee Rose of Scottsburg apparently was drinking at the El Dorado Ditch Company Bar at Unity Lake.
Boy, that screams a bright future and a better tomorrow.
Where police got a report of a man beating customers. Rose, who is 6'6" tall, weighs 300 pounds, had been drinking and got upset when bar patrons asked him about his family name, which triggered bad memories. Rose was visiting family members after spending several years on an Alaskan fishing boat.
I don't understand.
Why isn't this a hick watch?
I don't understand. What do you mean it triggered? What's your name? I'll kill you!
Exactly.
It seems like there's a interim step missing there somewhere.
So he assaulted 1, 2, 3, 4 people in this Unity bar. And police say, quote, he was throwing people around like rag dolls.
Best just Rose, to keep to yourself.
Rose then left the bar and started striking Unity residents as he walked down the street. He's accused of hitting and kicking Patricia Bradford, Loreen Bradford, Larry Stanton, Letha Catlin, Leanne Rye, Frank Hutchison, Justin Brooks, and James Wood, all of Unity. All were taken by private vehicle because they don't have an ambulance in Unity, the Holy Rosary Medical Center in Ontario.
That's fantastic. I don't even know where Unity, Oregon is.
Yeah, apparently this is near.
Has he killed
Ontario.
Everyone in the town? Is the town now bereft of citizens?
It's kind of like Bluto on the Popeye cartoon.
No, I was picturing that guy. Who's that guy in Pee-wee's Big Adventure? Where Pee-wee's talking to, there's my pop culture notes washing away. He's talking to Simone about, Simone, let's talk about your big butt. And then, like, the guy shows up and they're sitting in the dinosaur.
Anyway, Rose was staying at the Unity Motel. And that's where he returned after the incident of throwing people around like rag dolls. Two men in a pickup truck attempted to keep Rose at the motel while awaiting for police. Rose pointed a loaded 410-gauge shotgun at the two men, but was later arrested without incident when deputies from far away arrived.
What was the name of the bar again?
The El Dorado Ditch Company.
Okay, so I know that times are probably a-popping over there, and it's an economic boom for the ditch company, but my advice to you if you were in that bar is just be to don't start any conversations with anybody. Just sit there and stare silently into your Jim Beam and wonder where your life went wrong. Here's Tim Riley.
From Houston comes word, a woman was rescued after a gravel truck lost its 40-ton load on top of her car, trapping her inside. The gravel truck overturned at I-10 in Houston. This was a very scary moment and a tragic accident with a tremendous amount of weight.
She was stuck between some rocks and a hard place.
That's true. Some 80,000 pounds of contents pancaked her vehicle. Rescue crews dug the woman out. The civilians, citizens were using hubcaps to remove the gravel. Just look at the magnitude of this incident. You wonder how the person made it out alive. Strangers came to help. We had about 5 hubcaps, and I started passing them to the guys. It was kind of like a chain type of thing. I was using my hands, said one good Samaritan. She was directly underneath the middle of the 18-wheeler with all the weight of the pebbles on her back. The woman was transferred to Memorial Hermann Hospital, conscious and alert. She's in stable condition. She was trapped inside her car for about 40 minutes.
All right, there you go. I'm going to skip the blah, 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 underestimate this, you know, the gravity of the situation.
Meanwhile, JetBlue Airlines won a wireless license to cover high-speed internet and other communication services on commercial aircraft. This is the first time it's happened. It costs $7 million, so that'd be a good thing. You can use your computer on a plane.
JetBlue is, by the way, the preferred airline of wealthy people everywhere. So that's JetBlue is it's sort of like the in-between step between it, like me, which is where you're on Southwest, and then you've got JetBlue, which is that's like step B, and then C is like when you're Imus and you've got that timeshare thing going on with the Gulfstream. JetBlue, man, Lycus was is talking about that the other day. He came back from, he was like in Tucson or someplace, and it was not a paid plug. There was no consideration offered nor accepted, but he was going on and on about JetBlue. But it's just, I mean, it's you have never in your life heard a bad story about that airline. It apparently it's like the bee's knees of luxury air flight.
And you know what airports need? I couldn't find on my flight.
Fewer stupid people standing in front of me?
Well, no. Well, that too.
Fewer minimum wage guys with a gun ordering me to take off irrelevant parts of my clothing?
Well, no.
Okay.
But you need places to plug in your laptop somewhere so you don't use up your whole battery in an hour and a half. You're sitting there watching a movie and don't get to see the whole thing.
Oh, you mean on the actual plane?
Or in the waiting area.
No, that's a fantastic idea. You should totally do that.
I mean, you can't watch an entire movie. They make you get there 2 hours ahead of time, so you have all this time to kill. So you have a movie, which is like always an hour and 35 minutes, but your laptop only goes for an hour and 30 minutes,
right,
and there's
at the
no
end,
place
waiting,
to plug it in.
Waiting to see what happens to Gandalf, and then you just get the... it's just gone.
Hibernating. So it happened to me twice. So we need a place to plug in laptops at airports.
Good times.
I think that would be
cool. Let's see. We got this. This is from Rick about the Spelling Bee show. I've got it. This is from Nate. He called it the Beehive. Get 9 kids, put them in a house, make them spell everything they do. If you spell something, you're out! Out! Season 2, same show, except they have jobs at a pharmaceutical laboratory. All right, there you go. Rick, pleased to be asking, will you be playing the Five Phrases game with Don Rickles? Somebody asked us about that yesterday, and I feel like that, look, should we talk about this now? Because we're, what, because it's 1 o'clock, right? Is that when it's happening?
Yeah, it's happening
12
really
minutes
soon.
From now.
All right,
he's being prepped as we speak.
He's being wheeled out of his sarcophagus right now. They're hosing him down. We got the Don Rickles interview, which was difficult to get, by the way.
This is going to be live, by the way. This is not pre-taped.
It's not. It remains to be seen exactly how the interview is going to go. There were many, many, many layers of bureaucracy that had to be navigated by Susan Reynolds over at the CBS Radio Marketing to make this interview happen. I make no claims right now as to the quality of said upcoming Don Rickles interview. It really is just so I could say, da-da-da-da-da, and coming up, Don Rickles. It's what we call a marquee interview. Marquee interview is a phrase they use sometimes in the media, which means that the actual content of the interview may or may not be worth listening to, could be crap, doesn't know. It's all just so you can say that you've got, like, da-da-da-da, coming on the show, doing a thing. Don Rickles is 80 years old as of, I think, 2 days ago. So I'm not going to make any sort of guarantees about what sort of delivery Don Rickles is going to have. He is a living legend. He is an icon of comedy. But I am, I think probably we're pushing our luck if I try to work on a lot of phrases about, like, Kenny G and Frisbees and whatever.
So we want everyone to lower their expectations.
So really just expect, as we ask you to do
nothing.
almost every day on the show, we ask you not to have your expectations, but really, like way...
After all, how long do we even... We very seldom offer.
Yes, I mean, as long as I can make it through the interview without setting fire to something or without him having some sort of pulmonary embolism, we're going to chalk that up as one of the win column today. I'm not even really sure what to ask because that's going to be a short interview.
Well, you
it's
know
gonna
a
be
lot
like
about
nominated.
Him, don't you?
I do, but I mean, where does one even start talking to the king of the insult comics? I mean, I have no idea. So, I mean, I've sort of prepared some things, but we'll have to see how it goes. I got nothing. It's 503-733-2970. Let's see. We'll get to these calls here in a second. We got the Scotty J who is with us today. Scott Daly coming up later on. Jim Roop. Top 5, most overused talk radio beds of all time. Here is Tim Riley at the City Desk.
Time for the Geek Watch.
Here's your Geek Watch.
The Friday. High-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on that.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Microsoft has reassured players that it will continue to make old Xbox games playable on its new Xbox 360 console. An entry on one of the company's blogs sought to clarify comments made by Xbox chief Peter Moore during an interview. Game news sites picked up on remarks that suggested Microsoft was ending a commitment to make old Xbox games work on the new version of the console. The entry on the blog said an update was due soon, and they would add another dozen titles to the roster of those that could already be played on the Xbox 360.
Here's the only thing that matters about this story. There's only three elements of the story that have importance to anybody whatsoever.
Thank
by
you,
anybody, and by
I
anybody,
made,
I mean me. Because I am going to be obliged to buy the Xbox 360, can I, our good friend Tim Savage is here in the studio. He's observing us. He's lurking near the back of the nerve center today. Do you have an Xbox 360?
Sell your microphone, Tim number one. No.
Okay, so you don't. Now, do you have the Xbox?
No, I've got a PS2.
All right, okay. So, Dad, do you have, like, the tipping point where there has to be a finite number of games out before you'll spring for the next generation?
Oh, absolutely. I made the mistake buying the Nintendo 64, and I'm like, oh, God, this is going to be great. You know, Pilot Wings and Mario Brothers 64. And, you know, the next thing you know, there's a year and a half long wait, and then that GoldenEye game came out.
Yeah,
where you know, it was awesome, and then nothing ever again.
And then it's just a drought.
Yeah, and then I made the switch to PlayStation.
Yeah, that's like there's like the three guys that I knew when I was growing up who bought the Atari 5200, and then the Atari 7800, for which there was two games made, one of which was Pole Position 2, which no one was asking for or wanted to play.
But, dude, I totally heard that E.T. is going to be awesome.
Seriously.
When E.T. comes out, dude, it's going to make the system.
I saw have you seen that music video where the guy actually goes out to the New Mexico desert to dig up those E.T. cartridges that they buried
million.
Out there, the 50 that they buried in a big... we're now only talking, by the way, to men between the ages of, I think, 25 and 40. No one else has any idea what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But the thing is, they're going to put Halo 3 out for the Xbox 360, and that's going to be the point at which I have to buy it. And so all I need to know is that Halo 2 and Black will play on Xbox 360, because Black is, man, it's just, whatever vestiges of a life I had, they were just sucked away like so many sands down the hourglass. I mean, they're just completely gone. Alright, well let's close the Geek Watch here. We'll do a couple calls, then we got a break. It's 503-733.
We've got a break quicker than that, because if he's coming right at one.
Yeah, he's gonna get mad if he has to wait.
Yeah.
Call me a hockey puck. All right. Well, let's close the Geek Watch here. There's your Geek Watch.
By Rathar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
All right. Really quickly, Rob at the House of Rick. How are you, sir?
Hey, man. How about the five choice phrases game?
Okay. You got to get up earlier in the day if you're gonna be up to speed with these. We've already decided that we can't do that because. You know, he's 80 years old, and I don't want to give him cerebral collapse by throwing him a bunch of nonsense. He might reach to the phone and pull out my esophagus. So
I'll try to get up earlier tomorrow.
Thank you. Right. Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you. Let's take a break here. We'll come back. Coming around the corner, we got Don Rickles. It's going to be at the Chinook Winds next Friday and Saturday. He'll be gracing our airwaves here in just a moment. Later on, CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop will be here. We'll talk about what else? We got Scott Dowley from FilmFeverRadio.com, and we will count down the top five most overused talk radio music beds of all time. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It's Friday. Stay there. It's AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere.